Well, I think I come at it a little bit from a unique angle as a musician. There's so much mental focus that has to go into being an orchestral musician and, you know, playing a major symphony with 90 other fantastic musicians, and you've got this common mission to play, you know, whether it's Beethoven, Brahms, Mahler, whatever, beautifully, and all the practice that goes into that. And then in the moment, you know, being able to deliver your phrase exactly and on time and the right volume and the right intonation and as a team, you know. And I think that some of that just carries over into sort of your mental approach. I think of running, you know, every run you go on is a chance to practice your mindset, you know, your mental game, so that when you're in a race environment or you're in the mountains or, you know, I've been in some instances where it didn't expect to be snowed on and holy cow, all of a sudden I'm being snowed on. I'm in the mountains. I can't see where I'm going. And, you know, if you don't have that clarity of mind, you haven't kind of practiced centering yourself and relaxation and all those things. I think for me, it's just kind of a daily challenge, a daily endeavor to try and, you know, work on, I use the word centering, you know, just work on sort of finding that inner calm in whatever's going on around you. And, you know, I've got young kids and you kind of have to find that in the house, you know, in the clinic, things can be going on. You got to find that inner peace, and running is just a great place to practice that, right?
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Dave Brimhall. I know Dave from Instagram, where he goes by Montana Dave, and he shares a lot of pictures from Montana. So we talk about his running adventures there, as well as he's a local runner here in Kansas City. We've met in person a couple of times, but have never had a chance to really have much of a conversation. So this is Trail Talk, and this is our trail conversation. Hope you enjoy this time that I spent with Dave Brimhall. Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate you. Now, tell me how to pronounce your last name.
Brimhall.
Brimhall. Okay. Okay.
That's, you got it. Yep.
That's what I was going to say, but because in all of the, I would see your name come up, and I would go, "Who's that?" And so I finally went in and I wrote Montana Dave in front of your name because that's how you always show up for me in Instagram.
Yeah.
So what is? Did you grow up in Montana?
I did, yeah, right on the Canadian border, middle of nowhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? So yeah. Are you then team winter?
I love the winter. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I mean, I like all the seasons, but winter holds a special place in my heart for sure.
That's cool. So I landed you here in Kansas City. Well, and you're kind of, I don't, every time I see you, you're off someplace exotic, you know, running in the mountains or off somewhere. So you ended up in Kansas City, but you get around a lot.
Yeah, well, really roundabout way. I mean, I've lived in a lot of places. Came here via San Antonio, where I had a job in an orchestra, actually. My wife is, she works with the symphony here in Kansas City, so we've been here for a little while now. Yeah.
So are you both then involved in the symphony?
I used to be, but I'm now in physical therapy. Went back to school, and I'm a PTA, physical therapist assistant.
Okay, cool. So you can work almost anywhere.
Yeah, right. So it's worked out well to be here. Yeah.
So how long have you been here in Kansas City?
It must be about 10 years now. I have to sit here and do the math, but it's been a minute.
There was somebody else that I talked to who was involved in the symphony. I don't think it was on the podcast, but somebody I met who was involved in that world. And it's like that, the symphony is a mystery to me. I mean, I think I've been to maybe one performance. So.
Right on. Yeah. If you get a chance, I mean, the hall downtown is beautiful. So.
Oh yeah. We went down there. That is one of the acoustics in that place was just amazing.
Yeah, and this city's lucky. The orchestra really sounds good. You know, it's a great group. So yeah, if that's your thing, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I think it was only a small ensemble when we went there. It was back pre pandemic, and but yeah, I was really enjoyed it. So yeah, I think you've cued my interest. I may file that away. You know,
yeah,
because you know, if you, I don't know how you are, but when I think about date night, I'm like, you know, what are we gonna do? And it just
yeah. That's a great option.
I'll add that in. I'll add that in. My wife will have her, you know, she'll be shocked.
There you go. Right on.
But it'll be a cool experience. So how did you end up as a runner?
You know, it all started around junior high. Very small track team, and I was kind of the guy that ran the mile.
Okay.
And you know, I did okay at it, but it just was something that kind of stuck all through college. I ran just off and on, not real seriously, but you know, as I got into a music career, it was kind of a way for me to balance sitting in a chair playing an instrument for hours. You know, then I'd go out and go for a run, come back, practice some more, or go to a rehearsal, and it sort of had this like balancing effect on my life. You know, and the more you do it, as you know, it's kind of an addictive thing. You know, The better you get, the more you explore, the more you want to do. So,
and I forgot what instrument did you? I mean, did you have just one, or did you have a couple of it? You played as part of the orchestra?
Just the one, French horn. In the orchestra world, they call it just the horn, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think, does your hand get wet when you play? I mean, because you play with your hand in the bell, right?
Only if you're working really hard.
Okay.
Sweating a bunch. Yeah, not necessarily, no.
That's one of those random things. Is I've seen the seen orchestras or whatever on TV, and I'm like,
sure, yeah,
like, yeah. I wonder how much moisture comes out of the end of those horns.
Well, it does collect a lot of moisture. You'll see horn players. You know, you got to turn the instrument over and get condensation out. So all brass instruments are kind of that way.
Yeah. I've seen that. Yeah. My son played trombone, and I remember
Same idea.
He got a lot of water out of that slide.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So you ran then through high school, and were you on the like college team, or is that just?
No, very just amateur. Just me as a kind of stress relief kind of thing. And, you know, for the longest time, it was all road running. I wound up doing quite a few little 5Ks and half marathons. And it was really a lot sooner in my 30s when I said, wow, what's this trail running thing about, you know? And then everybody read Born to Run, and you know, that whole thing took off, and I think trail racing just became more and more mainstream.
So trails, did you then immediately jump into ultra marathons, or were you just still kind of recreational?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I jumped all the way in right away. I kind of tested the water and sort of, okay, well, what's a 50K like? What's 40 miles feel like? And at the time, it was a mix of running on trails, but also road ultras too.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you did the ultra distance on roads?
Yeah. A lot of my first long training runs were on the road. And in hindsight, I think that was good for me just because it was I don't know what you want to say, just a little more consistency in the surface and easier to kind of just gauge the distance. You know how it is. If you're out doing 50 miles on the trail, or let's say even 50K, and it's got a lot of vert, or it's really rocky, and it's, you know, 50K in the mountains is very different than 50K on a flat road somewhere.
Yeah. So. You really get a rhythm on the road.
You do. Yeah. It's just different, you know. And then I've got family with a place in Montana, so I'm out there summer after summer. I'm always going back with our family, and pretty soon my little short trail adventures were turning into, you know, all day adventures where when I go back every summer, I plan several ultra runs that I just do on my own.
Okay. So you just like, you'll decide I'm going to go out and run 30, 40 miles today.
Yeah, pretty much. And I try and spread it out. You know, if we're there for a few weeks, I'm pretty strategic about, okay, I'm going to place a long run here and some shorter ones, and then I'll do another ultra run. And I'm always looking to check out new trail. My in-laws have, I'm not sure whether they like it or not, but I got this huge Forest Service map, and I asked them if I could put it in the far corner of their garage. And this thing is tall. It's like it's as tall as I am, right? Because I've pieced several different ones together, and it's huge. And I've taken a red marker, and every time I run a bit of trail, I marker it, you know, and I might even make a little notation about a distance or something. And it's turned out pretty cool. Every summer I go back and I'm sort of surprised, you know, like, wow, I've really done a lot of these. And it's kind of turned into a game to sort of compare, you know, just a mental game of, okay, well, what's this one like in difficulty compared to this one? And where are the water sources? What's the vertical like? And just kind of exploring what I can do. So.
Yeah. So when you're out there, you talked about water sources, you know, most, you know, people who run trails, I mean, we kind of look to aid stations for water. So what do you do? What do you do when you're out there for 40 miles and no aid stations?
I definitely carry a good filter, you know, and then just having a good idea about, okay, am I close to the creek here? Is there another creek if I cross over here? You know, up there, you do want to filter the water, but it's pretty dang fresh. It's snow melt and it's running right down into the valley generally. So it's a matter of just really studying the maps, which is something I enjoy. I'm never just going to go out there and willy-nilly take off on some trail. I really want to know where I'm going. And then, like I said, carry a filter, carry enough calories, you know, and that's its own experimentation. As you know, you carry a vest, you've got different calorie sources, you've got maybe a reservoir or bottles or whatever, you know, it's something different for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
the with the filter, is that something you can just like put the water in and the filter's on top and it filters as you drink it? Or do you have to like stop and use a little pump and fill your bladder up?
The one I have, it's Katahdin is the brand, I believe is how you pronounce it. And you just, either way, you can just put it in your vest, or sometimes I'll fill it and squeeze it into another bottle, say I'm mixing an electrolyte drink or something like that.
Okay.
But it's very quick. It, you know, 5 minutes to take it out and you jack with it a little bit. Yeah, no big deal.
Oh, well, what's about the time you'd spend at an aid station?
filling up food. Yeah, well, and you know how it is. Sometimes those are pretty scenic spots to stop and just enjoy a creek or whatever, and you know, pretty view. So,
yeah. So, so is it your, what's kind of your mix between stopping and enjoying the view and running?
You know, on those adventures, I'm really not hard on myself about how fast I'm going. I rarely am looking at the data like, oh, what pace did I hold? You know, it's more about, okay, I've got so many hours. I really want to cover this. I want to see this view. I want to get up on this peak, whatever it might be. And I allow myself, you know, if I come around a corner and there's an amazing view, heck yeah, I'm going to stop and take pictures, you know, and just enjoy it. If I'm out there by myself, it's fine. Like you said, kind of finding a rhythm. It's not about pushing myself to beat some time or anything like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I know there are people who still go out. You know, they go out in those views, and they have the they're driven by data. And
yeah, I'm just not that guy. You know, I try and train that way during the week. I'm pretty regimented. I'll set out my training program and you know, do my interval sessions and tempo work and hills and all that, so that then when I go do those adventures, that stuff's not in my mind. You know. Mm-hmm. You kind of mentioned, I like to drive out from Kansas City. I've been out down to Arkansas recently, up to Iowa and Nebraska, just kind of seeking out little state parks. And whenever I do those, I'm not fixated on the data. You know, those are adventures. That's just fun time.
So when you're here in Kansas City, are you trail mix, mix of trail road? What's kind of your training?
Yeah, when I do kind of look back, for instance, recently, I looked back really closely at 2020, and it was, for me, that year was like almost exactly a 50-50 split of trail and road miles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's
not that I'm thinking about that all the time, but when I do go back and look, you know, that's kind of what I get.
So. That's, you know, that's actually not too bad to do for trail runners. I mean, I ran the Hawk and it was a DNF, and then turned around and went down to run the Pumpkin Holler 100 about 6 weeks later. And that was on gravel roads, and I had done 25 miles of training on roads that year. I was not ready for road running.
Yeah, there is something to that. I mean, I do think you have to be conscious about what if you're going to race, you know, how does that compare to what I'm normally running on? And then, you know, they talk about specificity. You got to dial in a certain amount of, if you're going to do a mountain 100 miler and you're not doing any kind of climbing, mm-hmm. you're going to be in a world of hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And the people from Florida who travel to do a mountain. That's difficult for them. I know.
There are ways to get around it. I mean, you can use a treadmill and do a lot of vertical on a treadmill. You just have to be strategic about your training. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And that's cool. So what races have you, what was your first official race?
Oh, geez.
Ultra marathon.
One of my first ones was actually right after we moved here. I did the Brew to Brew from the Boulevard Brewery to Free State over in Lawrence.
Okay.
And that was a road ultra.
It was a road ultra, fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many beers did you drink along the way? Because that's not only your time, it's the amount of alcohol or the amount of beer you can drink as you run that 40 miles.
Well, I have to admit, I didn't have a single one.
Oh, wait.
It's designed as a relay, right? So those teams, you know, people are drinking beer because they're running very short distances. But I knew there was no way I was going to cover 45 miles or whatever if I was drinking beer. So have a beer when I get there, you know, at the end. So.
Because I know there are some runners, and we run with them that fuel their runs with beer. And so
yes, I've seen that, and I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, yeah. So that was your first. That was your first first one. Where did you go after that? That was so 45 miles. That's a pretty good start. I mean, a lot of people start with just like 50K.
Well, and I'd done, you know, a number of just like marathon distance training runs. So it didn't feel like it was crazy because I'd actually been out, you know, doing some pretty long runs on my own. And then right after that, I just really jumped into 50Ks. There were a couple of years where I did, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 50Ks throughout the year. And that was just a great, you know, in terms of dialing in your nutrition and pacing and your mental strategy and you know, training beforehand and all that. That's where I kind of cut my teeth. But at the same time, every summer I was going back to Montana and doing not necessarily always ultra distance, but, you know, long day runs where I was doing a lot of climbing and I was filtering water and all, you know, like we talked about, all that stuff. So it was just kind of a process of lots of different things for me, trying lots of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was your first 100? You've done 100,
Yeah, I've done, I guess I've only run the 100 distance 3 times.
Okay.
The first one was out at Ottawa on the Prairie Spirit Trail.
Oh, my goodness.
And you mentioned kind of doing a road 100 miler. Well, you know, in retrospect, that might not have been the best choice for me because it was
That's what I was going to ask you. Because I did, you know, you were talking about during the pandemic, our running group did I'd call it a flat fat ass. You know, a bunch of us just kind of said, yeah, we're going to show up and we're going to run. And they had, you know, and I was on a relay team and I did 13 miles on that. I was like, that was plenty.
it's mind numbing too. You know, I mean, it's its own thing. You just mentally have to be prepared for that. And as my first one, you know, I wound up having to walk more than I wanted to, but I'm still really proud of getting it done. And it was important to have that first experience for me. And then I ran the Hawk 2 other times and I felt much better about those. That's of course a more standard, trail run.
Yeah.
Not an easy course. I mean, it's pretty techy.
No, it's not, an easy course. So do you have any lined up in the future? Anything you're working for?
I'm thinking about a few. You know, with the pandemic, I kind of just put everything on hold for a little while, focusing more on adventure stuff. But there are definitely some goal 100 milers that I want to do. I really want to experience that out in the mountains.
Okay.
I'm thinking about like the Bighorn 100 in Wyoming, the Bear 100, those kind of races. You know, well, and I've got some work to do. But
and you've got some. Unlike a lot of the people who are stuck here in Kansas, you've got some mountains to go train on. So,
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know a lot of times we have a few hills in Kansas, but not nothing like mountains. But still, you know, the altitude and the kind of climbing that you have from it's.
Yeah, that's true. Although you know, people do really well here training at Waco, you know. Our local hills, you can get quite a bit of vert in. So
yeah, yeah, it's surprising. I mean,
oh yeah, you
know, people come and think Kansas is flat. You know, it's you know, there are probably hillier places, but that is where we live, and yep. There's some pretty decent hills there to train on. So.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's your when you talked about nutrition and mm-hmm. what's your kind of go to for nutrition and fueling when you go on those long runs?
And I really do well with gels.
Really?
You know, yeah, completely honest. I really like Spring Energy. In the past, I've used a lot of goo products. They just work well. I guess I have a tough stomach, but I can do quite a few gels, and then I'll also have some real food too. I might have a sandwich or some bars or, you know, just it kind of depends on how long I'm going to be out there. But I've never had a problem just having the gel an hour or two gels an hour if I want to. I'm a big fan of an electrolyte drink too. So like I'll be sipping Tailwind as I'm going as well. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah, I know there are people who do that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know it's different for everybody.
And some people have the other, you know, opposite reaction. It just, you know, the
right. Guys don't. I don't know how many people I've talked to that just can't, gels just don't work, or certain brands are a complete no-go. I think at the end of the day, you got to just really dial it in for yourself, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because my experience with gels came from goo, and it didn't work well for me. I was cycling, and I was like, at an AIDS, you know, at the SAG stop, and I was... So I'll try this. And it's like, don't try things when you're out, you know, new things when you're out, you know, 35 miles away from where you have to end up.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's better to try it in your neighborhood a little bit or on a short local trail. Yeah, for sure.
So, but I've heard, you know, people talk about Spring Energy, and I know there are some others out there that have different formulations than the goo, but,
Yeah, I really latched on to Spring, and I guess I like the fact that it tastes like real food for one, you know, you can taste the apple or the banana or peanuts or whatever you're consuming. And, some of them tend to be a little more calorie heavy.
Mm-hmm. What kind of calories do they usually pack?
There's one I've been, and I forget the name of it right now. I really like it. It's like maybe 250 calories.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. If you have one of those an hour, it seems to really, and it doesn't feel like that intense sugar load that maybe I get from some of the more traditional gels. So mm-hmm. maybe a little slower burning.
You know? So how big a package? So you've got me intrigued here because I'm starting to rethink some things. How big is the pack?
You know, maybe it's a little bit thicker than a standard gel you might think of, but it's not huge.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
Same size, fits in your vest.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because I have, you know, I looked at what Spring Energy talked about and. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at baby food and I'm like, you know, the baby food's very similar, but that the best I can get out of a baby food was 90 calories. Well, like I'm buying them at Aldi and I'll buy the 90 calorie pack and they're good size. And so,
sure.
You know, I can put them in drop bags and they, you know, they work because I don't have to carry, you know, I'm not going out doing expeditions, but if I do anything like what you're talking about, wanting to get out and have, you know, take enough calories with me, you know, I'd have baby food packs coming out of all my pockets.
Well, and I'm not a nutritionist or anything like that, but there is something to be said for the different lines of carbohydrate. So yeah. Some of these gels have several different types and different proportions. And that's something to experiment with too. You know, some people can really tolerate one versus another. And I think that, you know, when you pay for some of these products, you're getting something that's going to be a little more slow burning, a little more efficient than just something like baby food or eating a mushed up banana, let's say, or you know, right. Something like that.
Yeah. I talked to a nutritionist, I can't remember what episode it was. And she was the one who talked about that. There's mm-hmm. several different kinds of sugar. And if you're just taking the one sugar,
right.
You know, and nothing else, your body kind of is craving, you know, it you have diminishing returns. Is basically
agreed. And I think a lot of people are okay for a little while with that, maybe a couple hours. But then, you know, and a lot of folks need to be having some protein and fat a little later on too, depending on how long they're out. Mm-hmm. There's been more and more research on that recently, and I think the science is going to get better and better on that.
Oh, about the protein and fat?
Yeah, and about the lines of carbohydrates. And actually, a few studies in the last couple of years looking specifically at ultramarathoners and sort of those who did the best, what they were consuming. A really interesting study showed that consuming a lot of electrolyte drink, like more calories per hour than you would normally think. In mountain ultras, those runners actually did better and they recovered faster. They reported feeling better the next day, let's say, or a few hours later. So there's definitely something to be said about having enough calories, having the right lines of calories and carbs and that sort of thing. So
that's interesting. So like in a race like that, do you drink most, I mean, do you consume a lot of electrolyte drink? Is that?
I do. Yeah. Pretty much just kind of a steady drip for me on, you know, and that's different for everybody too. I've experimented with a lot of different brands. Tailwind works great for me. And I sip that kind of the whole time I'm out.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. And I have kind of been a minimalist with that. And mm-hmm. I have gone with just basically water and salt. And, so I haven't been looking at the liquid for calories. And I thought,
hey, you're
kind of educating me here. So.
I'm no expert on this by any means.
I hadn't even considered that, you know, that maybe that would help my performances because the,
I think there's just so many variables, and that's part of what I love about ultra running. It's so many unique variables to the individual, to the race environment, or the, you know, whatever surface you're on, where you're at. And to the point about the electrolyte drink, we all have a different sweat rate too. You know, some of us are sweating out more salt than others. You know, some of us can tolerate drinking more at one time than others. So those are all, there's just so many factors to play with.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done some volunteering. I was volunteering at the Psycho Waiko, and then actually the Cactus Roulette, and saw some guys. I mean, it's not hot, and these guys are coming in, and they've got like white from their salt, you know, wringing their face from their sweat out so much salt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just everybody's chemistry, everybody's physiology is different. So,
yeah. I sweat a lot. I think I sweat a lot of. Liquid, but I don't know that I lose a lot of salt because I don't have that, at the end, like in the summertime, I don't, my clothes aren't encrusted with salt. They're just wet.
Right.
Well, and you know how the humidity is here sometimes. I mean, you end up running in wet shoes because of the water running down your legs. And filling.
Yeah, for sure. It can get pretty gnarly in the summer here. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's wild. But yeah, I will take a look into that with the Tailwind and see, kind of might adjust my.
Yeah, something.
Who knows?
Try.
I might be coming back to you and saying, "Hey, Dave, your advice really helped me out."
Yeah. Well, and if I had any advice there, I mean, if you are going to really test it out, you can either buy, they sell sticks of it that are like 200 calories, very carefully measured out.
Oh, okay.
You just put that in a certain amount of water, or you can buy a bigger bag and you can try mixing your own ratio. You know, some people like a little bit less. Say you're using 16 ounces of water and you just want one scoop instead of two, or maybe you want three. You know, so it's something to play with.
Yeah, and I typically am one that I try not to do a lot of sugar. I mean, just in general, which is, the reason I was kind of water and salt is because I was listening to people who were running fat adapted. And I was kind of, still working with the keto type diet. I never went full keto, but I was really cutting back on carbs. And so I was running with a lot of, fat, bulletproof coffee in the morning and head out for a run. And, so that's kind of where I was at. And I'm kind of thinking that I don't know that I'm going to continue that.
Yeah. If I wear my clinician hat, from the clinician standpoint, I have concerns about ketogenic and fasted running. I know it works for some folks. We both know some amazing ultra runners, right? Who are, Jeff Browning comes to mind, right? Who are just amazing. And they've got some great coaching athletes that are fantastic that run fasted some, and they were ketogenic diet and all these different products. But I have seen plenty of runners who get themselves into calorie deficits. We talk about red S. I don't know if you're familiar with that concept. It's basically not consuming enough. I mean, it's a multifactorial thing, right? But a lot of times it comes down to just not fueling enough not being rested enough. And that's when injuries can really tip off. Things like bone stress injuries happen to athletes that aren't fueling enough. So, you know, I see both sides of it here, and I certainly admire some of the athletes who are doing some of the fat adapted things, and it seems to work for them. But I also have to be very careful about giving advice. And, you know, in the clinic, I listen to those little cues that runners might give me about their diet, and I ask lots of little questions, you know. Well, you didn't feel great after this run. Did you fuel beforehand? Did you eat during, you know, were you well rested? You know, there's just so many factors. And I wind up seeing injuries and trying to piece together sort of the backstory. And a lot of times fueling is a component of that. And unfortunately, some of those fad diets can really have negative implications long-term, especially people that are just kind of willy-nilly. Oh, I read this online and I started, you know what I mean? There's a lot of that. So,
well, and I think, you know, there are some people who have pushed the keto and basically you've got, you know, what I was hearing back several years ago is people who were saying, well, yeah, you eat this way, you can lose the weight, and then you've got to eat this way the rest of your life. And I was thinking, that really can't be, you can't have that strict keto of, you know, like 50 carbs a day max for, I mean, it's okay for, I think, for losing weight, but I think you need to figure a better balance than that if you're going to, you know, I think, well, I was just worried about that causing long-term health problems.
Yeah, well, and we both know, you know, aerobic activity, you're certainly burning fat as fuel. That's a part of what the definition of aerobic exercise. But, you know, glucose, glycogen that's stored in your muscles and your liver is still really the primary fuel source. So if people are really depleting themselves, that can really be a problem. So that, I'm not, you know, lecturing anybody. That's just my clinician viewpoint. You know, I'm pretty careful about asking the right questions.
So, okay, since you have a little bit of, I'm not going to ask you a nutritionist, you know, but from the physical therapy, what should people be aware of who are vegan? Because I know a lot of runners who are vegan by choice,
probably the very first thing I would say is if that's a choice you want to make, talk to a nutritionist, talk to a dietitian. You know, off the top of my head, things that I've seen or heard about with runners in the clinic, problems with not eating enough protein, problems with not getting enough B vitamins. So you're just likely to, if you're not careful, there are certain things you're going to be deficient in that as a runner, you know, you're challenging your system. And if you're not getting some of that stuff back in, you're more likely to have some issues. So if I could give any advice, there are some great nutritionist dietitians here in town, online. You know, if you have any questions, really seriously, I mean, I can't say that enough. I think a lot of people just make assumptions, and you know, talk to somebody who does a pro. Talk to somebody who does it day in and day out.
Yeah, and I will list the dietitian that I talked to the whatever episode. It's Dana, yeah. And I cannot remember her last name. She specializes as a dietitian for athletes.
Awesome.
So
great. Yeah.
She has had some good advice. So,
awesome. Yeah. But,
So cool. So I'm going to ask you a little bit more then of your mental. You said your mental practice. What is your mental practice for ultras?
Well, I think I come at it a little bit from a unique angle as a musician. There's so much mental focus that has to go into being an orchestral musician and, you know, playing a major symphony with 90 other fantastic musicians. And you've got this common mission to play, you know, whether it's Beethoven, Brahms, Mahler, whatever, beautifully, and all the practice that goes into that. And then in the moment, you know, being able to deliver your phrase exactly and on time and the right volume and the right intonation and as a team, you know? And I think that some of that just carries over into sort of your mental approach. I think of running, you know, every run you go on is a chance to practice your mindset, you know, your mental game, so that when you're in a race environment or you're in the mountains or, you know, I've been in some instances where didn't expect to be snowed on and holy cow, all of a sudden I'm being snowed on. I'm in the mountains. I can't see where I'm going. And you know, if you don't have that clarity of mind, you haven't kind of practiced centering yourself and relaxation and all those things. I think for me, it's just kind of a daily challenge, a daily endeavor to try and, work on, I use the word centering, just mm-hmm. work on sort of finding that inner calm in whatever's going on around you. And I've got young kids, and you kind of have to find that in the house, in the clinic, things can be going on. You got to find that inner peace, and running is just a great place to practice that. Right?
I'll get back to my conversation with Dave Bremhall in just a minute. First off, I want to talk to you a little bit about what I do as a coach. My clients typically say, I know what I need to do. I know what I should do in order to get to be the place I want to be. I just can't seem to get myself to do it. Usually when those things happen, there's some mindset issues, there's some limiting beliefs, there may be even some strategies that can help you get yourself unstuck. That's what I do as a mindset coach, as a life coach. So if you ever find yourself saying things like that, like I know what I should be doing, but I am not doing it, give me a call. I offer a free 25-minute mindset reset. Can help you get some clarity on what's going on, and give you direction for how you can get yourself a mindset that will get you towards your goal, whether that's running ultramarathons, whatever your goal is. What I would say, looking for your epic thing, wanting to have an epic life, I can get you on your way. Contact me here at the ultramindsetpodcast.run, and there's a sign up. You can schedule a 25-minute call. Get your mindset reset. Now back to my conversation with Dave Bremhall.
Well, you mentioned your music, and so I'm just as an outsider, I would imagine you said, your focus. So you've got to pay. I'm guessing you have to pay attention to the score, the notes, mm-hmm. And then you also have to then be listening to everything else. So you're following the score, you're listening. And you really have to, almost, I would imagine, block out everything else.
Is that what you were saying? You kind of said it better than I did. Yeah. It's a number of things, right? So you have to really be in tune with your own production of what you're trying to say on your instrument, but then very in tune with what's around you. You got to know what's coming next. You got to really know your teammates, of course. Your awareness just goes up. Musicians, we talk about the research, right, that they use a lot of brain functions, and there's a lot of processes going on. It's not just one brain center. It's the whole brain lights up when you play an instrument. Mm-hmm. I think that there's reality there, and I think that it gives you a mental state that really, for me, it just connects so well with endurance sport. It's you're using some of the same good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because a lot of times I think just from people I've talked to who have had they've been not necessarily a breakdown, but it's been their mental game that has caused them to DNF, and
sure,
a lot of times they've gotten out of that state. I mean, when you get into that flow state and can stay there, or when you can get back to it when things go wrong.
Yeah, right.
Because there's things can happen. And
And I love that you mentioned the flow state. I mean, I think that there's something that music allows that flow state to happen. Arts, just in general, I think painters find that flow state, sculptors do, musicians, anybody who's really, honed in on something like that. And that really correlates well with running. You have to find that flow state. It's something you practice, right? Just on your day-to-day runs. And then, like you said, when things go haywire or they go sideways, like they do, when you're out there for 50 or 100 miles, you have to have sort of the right checklist of, okay, things aren't going so well. We got to get back to that flow state. But first, we got to make sure we're, whatever it might be, whatever your personal checklist of things is.
Yeah. I had to deal with that in the Pumpkin Holler. They had it's all on gravel road. They had a woman actually trying to run people off the road. I mean, it was very, very dangerous. And it happened just a few hundred yards in front of me. And I thought I was going to have to bail into the ditch as well. But yeah, she ended up in an altercation with some of the runners ahead of me. And, you know, it just, I noticed after that, well, and I was hot and I was tired, and it was, you know, about the time when your body's starting to complain. Mm-hmm. And so all of that stuff kind of cascaded, and it was just, I felt like just drained after it. And so I had to kind of bring myself back and say, no, wait a minute. You know, you're going down this cascade of negative stuff that's going on. You need, and to be able to bring myself back and get into that flow state. It was, it's something that I practice as well.
Awesome.
But I think I don't hear too many runners talk about focusing on mental practice. And there's, it's kind of left as, well, you know, I'm just going to go out and do a long run and then think that it's going to just be automatically there.
And, you know, running is special for me because it's I don't want to say it's an escape because it's not that, but it's different than the rest of my day. It's a chance to really be with my thoughts. You know, in meditation, it's sort of, if you meditate, and you practice that maybe with a teacher, the idea is to just allow thoughts to come and go, to just be open, right? And when you're out running, I mean, I don't know about you, but lots of different thoughts are coming around. I'll be seeing things around me, and I try and process that. And afterwards, I take a lot of photographs when I run too, because I'll see, you know, beautiful sunset beyond that mountain vista that we talked about. And then, you know, part of it for me is looking at some photographs afterwards. Maybe I journal a little bit about my experience, look at the data if I want to. And all those different pieces sort of help me to make a bigger picture of what it felt like, how I feel afterwards, you know, the experience. How does that compare with something previously? Where is it leading to? Or maybe not. Maybe it's just, you know, sort of reviewing the day or the 1 hour run even, or half an hour. It could be whatever, you know, but.
So is it a regular practice that you do at the end of your runs, or is just?
So I've got it right here. I use this, just an old journal, and I write something about every run I do. And I pretty regularly take some photographs on almost every run I take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And that's, I've seen your photographs, and it's like, wow. Dave's out there in some other exotic great location. Cause I mean, they're just beautiful photographs. And
well, thanks. I appreciate that. Well, and like I said, you know, if I'm out trying to do an interval session early in the morning, I'm probably not taking pictures. Right. But on those adventure days, yeah, absolutely. That's part of the experience for me, is to really just enjoy it.
And that's something that I don't do is the journal after the run. I started that. I was trying to, you know, just, basically more stats, but that's an interesting aspect to mental training, because that would, if I knew I was going to sit down and write after I got back, you might make me pay more attention.
So it's been really helpful for me. I'm a person, I think I benefit from just journaling in general, just sort of about my thoughts and feelings of the day. And I do some of that that's just sort of separate about my day, but I also have my runs in there. I've got the data about the runs, but then also, you know, what was it like? Was it cold out? How did I feel? You know, was I rested? Did I eat enough? What was I thinking about? Because I don't know about you, but sometimes the run is the perfect place to bring three or four ideas together, something that I've been stuck on. Maybe it's helping somebody at work. Maybe it's a problem at home. Maybe it's, you know, something I'm just trying to kind of put together. And a lot of times that'll happen while I'm running.
Yeah. And I find that my mind, if there are times when I try not to let it go, you know, because you can rehash work, you know? Then you end up as like, you know, I was out here in this beautiful, beautiful place.
Right.
And I brought my work out here with me. And it's,
yes, I know what you mean. But I think that, to your point, you know, that's a practice, right? So you mm-hmm. can practice controlling those and practice your mindset, practice what you allow where you allow your thoughts to go and where they sit.
Yeah, and that's, and you talked about meditation. That was where I first started getting some focus and not say control, but some management of that. Because I don't know that you control your thoughts, but because they'll pop up without you can't, they're almost, you know, like,
yeah, no, it's more about how you react to it. Right. So the thought comes up and do you have an adverse reaction to it, or you just kind of look at it mentally and go, oh, okay, well, I'm thinking about this. And,
yeah.
You know, do you allow a stress response? Do you allow a happy response, a sad, or, you know, do you judge it? How do you,
Yeah, or to put it away for one, and so I've over time in the mindset practice that I do, I've noticed that my thoughts come at a pace where I can process them, whereas before it felt like, you know, they were NASCAR, you know.
Man, that's great. I think you've nailed it there. Yeah, and it's maybe it's controlling the pace of the thoughts, being able to. Like pictures coming by, are you able to see them one at a time and sort of, you know, make sense of them?
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's been an ongoing practice for me. And it's one of those things I can be out in the woods and have to kind of bring myself back. Says, wait a minute, you know, pay attention to what's around you. Cause this is really,
sure.
You get to be out here in this and you're not sitting in traffic somewhere.
Yeah, no, 100%. Hey, we get to do this, you know, and going back to the clinician thing, you know, having helped people in various injuries and accidents and things get back to what they want to do, man, it's such a great reminder. Like, we get to run, you know.
Yeah,
it's a privilege in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So as a physical therapist, you know, what are the things that runners can do to kind of not have to visit you?
Oh man, I love that question. Well, you know, I think physical therapists are runners' friends, man. I think we can be, I've heard it said they can be your best friend in healthcare. I think that's so true. That's gold. You know, I think from our perspective, if we can help people to be more proactive and not see us when something's really broken down, that we would love that. You know, somebody who comes in with questions and, hey, this isn't quite feeling right, or I'm training for this and I'd like a little help. I'd like you to sort of help me figure out, am I doing the right stuff? Am I, you know, instead of seeing that person who's really injured a tendon or had a bone stress injury, you know, man, we would love to help you on the front end instead of that on the backside, I think, so to speak, you know. I'm a huge proponent of strength training. I feel like that's just, there's so many misconceptions with runners. There's a lot of disinformation. You know, you get on social media and there's just a ton of garbage. Especially when it comes to running and the demands of running. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, we talk about sort of the five main human basic movements, you know, the push, the pull, the hinge, the squat, the loaded carry. Runners should be doing those, you know, especially as we age. And some of that is just, you know, basic performance kind of stuff. Some of it is, hey, you know, if you're putting these demands on your body with the load in the gym, and then you go out on the trail, you're just less likely to have a problem. You know, a great example is the calf complex. Runners notoriously don't do anything to train their calf muscles, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of really great ways to do that. And the calf is a huge performance aspect with forward propulsion. And unless you're going pretty dang fast, it really is the prime mover of pushing you forward.
Uh-huh.
You know, but when runners talk about doing strength training, it's usually some kind of body weight squat and body weight ones, and they're not really giving any true load to, and I'm just using the calf as an example, but a lot of times for me, it's just sort of educating runners on, you know, so a little body weight stuff is fine, but you don't understand the loads on your body. Like, you need to be, you need to be picking up some heavy things, you know, in a safe way, but that's kind of where the strength coach aspect for me, I help people. Away from my job at work, after hours, I've helped half marathoners, marathoners, ultra runners. And I think it's just building resilience. You know, I can't say scientifically that I'm helping them prevent injuries, but it's just making their bodies more resilient to the training to, and hey, they perform better too.
You know, yeah. So. Yeah. I spoke to a lady, I haven't got the episode released yet. But she's 60, she's in her 60s, and she made the comment. She says, coaches don't know how to deal with older runners. For her, she said that, because I know a lot of coaches that I have talked to and they talk about strength training. They're doing lighter weight, you know, doing body weights, or they're doing low load and high reps. Mm-hmm. And this woman said she has to really lift heavy.
And, yes, 100%. And if you're not, I mean, when you look at the data, when you look at the research, the demands on different muscle groups and joints are much, much more than runners think. You know, when you see those runner's world videos where they're holding little tiny dumbbells and they're doing really high reps of some lunge pattern, I think that that's good tissue conditioning. You know, you're getting the body ready to do more, but that's all that is. When you go out and run, you're putting more load to your body than you are doing some of those movements. So, you know, and I'm not passing judgment. I think that that stuff's great. You know, especially with younger runners, you want them doing bodyweight stuff to condition things, to get ready to do more. But if you're not helping a runner lift some heavy things, especially as they get older, you're not doing them any service.
Because, well, I think just from what I hear, runners are afraid of building up too much muscle mass.
That's just a real fallacy. You know, you can lift heavy and you're not going to bulk up, especially if you're training as a runner. I mean, if you're, just to throw out a number, if you're running roughly 50 miles a week, let's say, and you're lifting heavy once and maybe another slightly lesser session, so two resistance sessions during the week, you're not going to bulk up. You would just have to be doing a different percentage of things to be worried about that. It's just, that's a real fallacy that kind of drives me crazy. Yeah. You know, runners are so fixated on, oh, I got to be lean. And if anything, you're going to lose some residual fat probably, and you're going to lean up even more if you pick up heavy things, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and there's plenty of ultra runners who are pros that don't have the typical lean runner's body. I mean, Sally McRae has mentioned that several times. She gets, you know, people commenting about her body shape.
She's such a positive example for people. You know, I think she's a coach who's really getting people doing great strength work and just raising the awareness, you know, especially with female athletes, but just in general, like, hey, you got to, resistance training is cool. It's important. You know, she talks about how she just doesn't have injuries. And that's what I see, you know, with the people who make it part of their routine, they don't have those little things that set them back here and there. They're just able to continuously train.
Yeah, and this year she's focused on helping other people strength train effectively. She's got a new app, and she's done some things, because she was just, when I talked to her, she was just getting that rolled out. But
she's doing really cool stuff. Yeah, she's definitely worth following on social media. Just lots of positive stuff.
Yeah, I think the app was her attempt to be able to coach, to get some benefit to people who wouldn't necessarily have to be able to hire her as a coach, mm-hmm. just to get some of the information that she does and how she trains out there. And so,
And that's part of it too. You know, from my angle, it's kind of meeting people where they are, because you can have, two runners, and one did a lot of weightlifting, say in high school or college, and they're very comfortable in the weight room. You get another runner, the same body build, maybe same age, never done any strength training. And, you know, I'm totally cool with either scenario. You got to just kind of meet the person where they are. And some of that's just their comfortability, let's say, with being in the gym and learning new movements and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So free weights or weight machine, which is?
I think there's benefits to both. I've become a huge fan of loaded carries. That wasn't something that was really in my wheelhouse in the past, but picking up free weights and walking slowly, marching especially. I don't know if you've heard of a physical therapist named Chris Johnson. He's definitely worth a follow online. I've taken several continuing education courses with him, and he's amazing, number one. But then number two, he's a huge proponent of marching drills, and that's really changed my perception of running and how I strength train.
Since you said loaded carries, it made me think of I've two people recently on the podcast who talked about rucking, and mm-hmm. that has kind of made me I've done a little bit of experimenting with it. I don't have a full ruck pack, but I've I took.
Yeah. So what are kind of your initial thoughts? I saw you do a post online about doing some rucking.
I've done three. I did one Thursday night and probably the heaviest I did 20 pounds and I could definitely feel it. I mean, I was going to go this morning. I was like, maybe I could ruck. And then I kind of checked with him with the body. I was like, no, I'm still sore. I probably better just but I did hills. I mean, I still did, still went out and did the Los Lobos loop, which has got some pretty good elevation because I'm really working on trying to get my hill technique. Because cool. For me, yeah. that was kind of a weak area for me in my running. So this year I'm looking to focus on hills, but the ruck with the hills, really works those muscles that I use to get up the hills. So,
yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, backpacking, it's sort of a similar idea, right? You know, people out in the mountains carrying that 40-pound pack, you're going to need the number one train for that. But then number two, you get a benefit from doing that. Just a little perspective, though. I mean, it's not unusual for me to have a runner have a 50-pound dumbbell in each hand while they march.
Okay. So you're talking about a lot bigger load.
Yeah, because you got to think about the performance demands of running. I mean, we're talking about if you're talking about vertical ground reaction forces, each time you strike the ground, it's like 2.5 times your body weight loading. So, and then when you start to divvy that out with the research and look at different muscle groups, man, if you're not loading things pretty heavy, you're just not simulating what's happening when you're out running. So back to the loaded carries, you get a number of benefits there, right? You get, especially if you're marching, you get single leg stability. You're loading all the way through the foot to the ground, right? You're making the hip really support. You're also getting amazing trunk stability all the way from your head and shoulders to the floor. You're getting your body to be in a tall position. And that's a challenge with ultra running because you're out there and you got to have your trunk in that upright position, very upright for hours, right? Mm-hmm. So carrying loaded, heavy stuff around and either walking slowly or marching just really helps you kind of build that ear. So
that's good. So, you need it balanced, like one. Could you just like put a sack of water softener salt on your back and?
yeah. I mean, in theory, I'm a big fan of a weighted vest.
Weighted vest. Yeah.
I've got one that's about 50 pounds. I might put that on and hold dumbbells.
Okay.
So I just think that it needs to be pretty heavy. If you're just going to throw something on your back, you have to be a little careful about is it balanced? Is it
right,
sloshing around? You know, so I think if somebody's really going to ruck, you're better off to buy a really good weighted vest. That's my personal, because it's going to be right around your core, right around your midsection. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those allow you to adjust the weight. You can take some weight out.
Okay. The weighted vest, you can.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that would be a little bit more balanced. If you're going to do that.
Yeah. If it's something you're really interested in, I think it might be worth.
Yeah. It might be worth
looking at some weighted vest. Yeah.
Because you were talking about weighted carry. I was running across the dam at Waco and the CrossFitters were out there. And, and so for people who don't know, it's a dam that's holding back the water and on the backside of it, it's a grass hill. And, I don't know what it's steep. And these guys were dragging tires up the hill. And, awesome. One guy had a sandbag. It looked like a small person and he was throwing it across his shoulders marching up the hill with it.
Amazing.
I was just like running along the road. And I went, these guys are really, these guys are really going after it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, there is a part of me that thinks that if we trained a little bit more in that direction, we'd probably be better runners. I mean, I think it's finding a mix, right? A lot of times those athletes aren't doing the endurance work, so they don't have the cardio endurance that we do. But on the other hand, I think runners are shy about pushing, pulling, lifting heavy stuff. And I think that that's something that can be changed, and I try and educate people on, especially if I have somebody and we're rehabbing an injury, it's an opportunity for me to really change their mindset about going forward. Hey, I don't want to see you back in here again, for this same injury, or maybe I can help you prevent something else. Like let's get a little stronger here. These are things you should do every week. Well, here's some movements that are going to help you out long term. So
yeah, that's cool. So do you have any races ahead that you're that you're training for, or, and then I'll go ahead and answer that. I've got a follow-up question after that.
No, so. I'm not signed up for anything right now. Like I said, the pandemic just kind of had me put everything on a back burner. I've got some long-term goal races I want to do.
That was the second question I was going to ask you. What's your kind of dream races that you're thinking like, well, maybe I get out there and get one of these in?
Yeah, well, I'm always kind of looking at these ones out of the West. I'd like to do the Bighorn 100 someday. I've been following that High Lonesome 100 in Colorado. That looks pretty awesome. Just those kind of things. I think that's kind of a next step for me. It takes a lot of coordination to make that happen in terms of family and work.
Yeah, and family everything. And everything. So.
But if that's where I'd like to head next, I believe.
So any thoughts about going farther than 100, the 200 or the longer?
Never say never, I guess, but you know, 100 miles in the mountains. That's for me right now. That feels like a pretty lofty goal. So probably start there and then see where we get.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. Well, thank you a lot, Dave. Before I let you go, I have a tradition that I've started. I'm calling it the bridge questions.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
So what is your must-have piece of gear for when you're running?
Ooh, man, I like a good hat. A good hat is important.
Okay.
I've got a lot of hats. My wife would tell you I've got several shelves full of hats. So I'm a hat connoisseur. I really like having the sun out of my eyes. I like that different hats could be for different weather.
Yeah,
I could go on and on about hats.
So not shoes. Not...
Yeah, I mean shoes too.
Shoes too.
Okay. Shoes too. Yeah, but I'm a little more. I've only got a couple of kinds of shoes that I really run in.
Okay. Yeah, my wife and I were having a discussion about the cost of running, and she goes, "This," she said, "this should be an inexpensive sport." And I says, "Well, you know, just be glad I'm not golfing." And she goes, "Golfing is not that expensive." And I was like, I think that. It's probably a little bit more.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes, right? You kind of got to dial in the desire to just buy a bunch of gear. At the end of the day, you really just need shoes. So.
Yeah, and okay. Second bridge question: what is the weirdest thing you've seen on the trail?
Weirdest. Man, I'd have to think about that. I've certainly run up on some animals that really freaked me out a little bit, but I can't say that was weird. Probably just other trail runners, you know, at races. Sometimes, you know, people will be in really wild outfits. As you know, that's kind of a thing with the trail scene. You might run around a corner and see somebody wearing, a full Superman outfit or a huge wig or face paint, or, you know.
Yeah.
Which I love, you know. There's just all different types of folks out there and having a great time. So in terms of weird, that might be...
Okay. Third question is, what is your word or phrase that describes your life philosophy?
Oh, man. I try and think of myself as an open-minded person. I think we all have judgments. We're all kind of quick to judge ourselves, to judge others. And I'm not free of that either. But I really try and take a step back and have open-minded thoughts about other people, about new ideas, about my surroundings, myself. I think I've allowed myself to grow by just trying to really keep an open mind about things.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Because there is a comfort in trying to be right and believing you're right. And I've definitely
failed there. Look, I've been judgmental, but I try and keep an open mind about things.
Yeah, so. And I have become a lot less certain of what I know, so...
Right. I think that's healthy. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of what you were kind of what you said, you know, be open-minded.
Man, there's so much to learn, right? If you're open-minded, there's always something new.
Yeah. Hey, thank you a lot, Dave. I appreciate taking time.
Hey, you too, Eric. It's been really cool.
Fun conversation. Yeah. Thank you a lot for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. I truly appreciate everyone who does listen here and your involvement, that you take time to listen to the stories that we share and the fun that we have, serious topics as well. I'm not a numbers person, but we're coming up close that almost 1,000 listeners a week. I just bumping that. So
That being said, if you know somebody who might appreciate what we do here, the things that we talk about, send them a link, invite them to tell them about, talk to them. That is how we've been able to grow. I've been able to grow this podcast. And of course, you being here to listen. And I really, truly do appreciate that. Remember, if you have any comments, feedback, stories, or questions you'd like to ask, you can go to ultramindsetpodcast.run. You find show notes for this show and all the other shows, as well as podcast players. If you have people who don't listen to podcasts regularly, they can play the podcast episodes through the website. And also, there's information there about how you can help support the show. My affiliate links, some mindset courses, How to Crush Your Goal course, and several different options there. Also, I am a Qi running instructor, and this episode is airing right around in April of 2022. I have in the Kansas City area coming up a Qi running workshop on May 7th, 2022. It'll be a four-hour workshop from 8 to noon in Overland Park. If you're interested in that, or if you know a runner that has been struggling with injuries or is just looking to run more efficiently, send them to their ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can navigate yourself to some information about Qi running and how that can help. Thank you a lot for listening. I will see you next time.